Welcome to the Sports Passion Podcast. Your host, Lars Marendorf.
Hello and welcome to the Sports Passion Podcast. In this episode, I'm going to talk with Patrick Bexell from Habs Eyes on the Prize. That's a great blog, and they also have podcast mainly about the Montreal Canadiens, and that's going to be the main topic we talk about. There will be a lot of other different topics we talk about. We will go into games 1 and 2 of the Stanley Cup Finals. We will go into the run of the Montreal Canadiens, how they were able to overcome adversity during the season, but also during the beginning of the playoffs, and what they might have to do, and a couple of things that they did wrong in games 1 and 2. And so, Patrick Bexell from Eyes on the Prize, Canadiens website. So enjoy the next half hour with Patrick. So we're going to talk to someone once again who is an in-depth analyzer of the Montreal Canadiens, and it is Patrick Bexell from Sweden. Patrick, great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me on so late in the season.
Well, we talked about it last time. We talked about what could happen for the Canadiens, and in fact, the last time we talked, they had just fired their coach. So it is strange in a way that when you look back in the history of NHL teams, there are a couple of teams that fired their coach and went on a deep run, and even some of them, Pittsburgh comes to mind. I think St. Louis, did they fire or hire the coach in the season as well? Some of the teams did, and they went on a deep run, and the Canadiens did as well. So starting from the coaching change and up and down the season with the COVID protocols there, some games they had to reschedule there. What happened with your Canadiens that they were able to galvanize and go on such a run like they did in the last couple of weeks?
Well, first and foremost, I think we have to mention that the North Division wasn't as bad as many things or thought. I think I mentioned it on Twitter somewhere that if you look at the top and bottom teams in each division, the North Division are the most even one. It's less points between the top team and the bottom team. And that speaks about a more even division than maybe the South, where you have punching bags like Arizona, you have the West with Buffalo, East with Buffalo, as I said. And you have these situations where you have teams that are not really strong, so you win seven, eight, nine games from them, whereas in North Division it was sort of more of a rock paper scissors thing. You might win against one team but you lose against another that has a different kind of setup. So I think that has benefited Montreal. That is, it's been a very even league. With the coaching change, you get someone that has been involved and groomed in many ways to be the head coach for Montreal Canadiens. It happened a little bit faster than we all expected. But he had this system. He also had a system, and I think the COVID break in some ways were very fortunate. In some ways it was very fortunate, and I'm coming to that. In other ways it obviously wasn't, because you got rushed into play some games at the end with what's every other day, and you had to travel quite a bit in order to get them sorted. But the COVID break and the situation and the week after when the North Division was still going, Ducharme had a chance to implement his system into the team. And it was a little bit of a negotiation, you know, finding the right lines, finding the right, how should I say, the right
combinations,
players, yeah. combinations. Yeah, exactly. And I think that it benefited Montreal in that regard. I also think that it's never good to get a concussion, but the fact that Allen played so well in net meant that you didn't have to rush Carey Price back into the game. Yeah. He even played a game for Laval together with Gallagher. They played so well at the end, so you didn't really need to rush these players. That has been very, very important in the playoffs. And I think it starting the playoffs with a very fresh Carey Price, it's going to help you any given time. Let's be honest about that. But then looking at the playoffs, you know, there's one of the turning points in the Toronto series is a very unfortunate accident. We have to acknowledge that. And it's terrible to see someone get knocked out, even if it's by accident. So I think, you know, I think it shook Toronto, but also Montreal sorted out their game plan. And we've seen this all through the series, more or less. They played a bad first games in many ways, but then they have adjusted to the other team. We saw it in these two games that I'm sure we're going to talk about later, where the first game was not very good. The second game against Tampa was a lot better, and in many ways Montreal should have won last night's game. But I think it's the confidence of the coaching, the confidence of the team. And when you get a confidence going, it's all those snowballs and everyone can benefit from it. Everyone is more or less saying, you know, Montreal has been lucky with injuries. But you have to realize one of the best players is on absence because he took the season off after half a season. Jonathan Drouin, who you know, I don't know what's going on, and I wish him all the best, and I hope he comes back to hockey. But that's a big part of the Montreal Canadiens, and obviously you have to acknowledge that Montreal has been unlucky in that regard as well. We got three players, Gallagher, Petrie, and Weber, playing with injuries. Known injuries, and there are other players playing with unknown injuries, and obviously we got Jake Evans that was hit by Scheifele in one of the dirtiest plays I have seen from over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, talking about luck or unfortunate plays, I mean, of course the Tavares injury, that's a bad luck for the Maple Leafs, but they still, I mean, I talked about the Maple Leafs, they still had a 3-1 lead. So you could argue, okay, they lost that game, they were shocked in that game, no doubt about it, but they still managed to win three games in a row, and they dominated at times in those three games. So,
it's a subject for another podcast,
either
with you or me, or as I've had it actually on the list of the offseason, but you follow football, I follow football, and it doesn't seem like you can really bring that Galactico kind of lineup in hockey. You need a more even distribution, especially in a system where you have a cap.
Yeah,
that you can't put 40 million into four forwards and hope for that they will outscore every other team. And that's what happened, you know. Marner and Matthews scored one goal between them, and it was a power play goal, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and that's
Nylander stepped up. That's for sure. But obviously Tavares was out injured, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah, and I mean, my team, so to speak, the team I like, the Avalanche, they also had problems adjusting. They were a high scoring team, a fast team, and they were not able to continue to play that way. So you got to find a mixture there. And I mean, sure. We're going to talk about the two teams. The Lightning found that mixture. I mean, they were some kind of that high scoring or at least offensively gifted teams the last couple of years as well. But they needed some time and some adjustments on the grid side, if you want to call it, to be able to win.
They also needed to lose the final.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that. They've been in the finals the last 3 years,
conference finals.
They lost the first one.
Yeah.
Out of those 3 years, it's amazing what the Lightning have done. And obviously, they also have players that has bought into this. You look at Stamkos and Hedman, they have taken less money than they are really should be. I mean, if you look at the level of quality that they are and which other players are similar, they've taken about $1 million each less a year. That's $2 million that you can work on other contracts. I think Point has as well taken a little bit of a lesser deal. And that means you bring in another fourth line player that is arguably better than most other fourth line players. And it helps.
And I mean, I don't want to make a podcast with a guy from a Canadian's homepage, a podcast about the Maple Leafs, but each time the Leafs signed one of their players, I thought, yeah, that's $1 million too much. That's $1 million too much as the market price. And what I don't understand is, I mean, I don't know about marketing options in Toronto in detail, but I would think that you are able to make more money in Toronto marketing-wise than in other places. So you could take less money and make that back on the advertising front. That's what I would expect. But let's not talk about...
And also, you know, people will point to tax, but these guys are, you know, paying tax in Aruba or somewhere else where there's a they employ a good lawyer to set them up with a good tax deal anyway.
Yeah, I mean,
going on to Montreal. Yeah, I was surprised they turned around that 3-1 series to Toronto. Toronto had that skill that they really should, but that, I think that's where the confidence really built in. And you saw the adjustments by the coaches, the Jake Evans, Danault and Gallagher line. They really shut down the top line of Toronto. And that is how it has continued. They took on the Scheifele line. They took on the... Stone line in Vegas as well, and you've seen it all the time. These lines have not been able to produce. Then you have the special teams. You have was it 13 games long?
30. I think it was 30 shorthanded situations.
Yeah, and 13 games. I think it stretched for over 13 games where no other team scored. And if you can close off the man advantage and then outscore the opponent with a fourth line, a gritty fourth line with Armia, Stahl, and
Perry.
And then you, and a third line with, however you want to rate that third line, but if it's the Kotkaniemi line, which hasn't really been working, I would say that is the third line. But then you have a second line where you have two youngsters, and if I want to be anyone playing hockey right now, okay, I would probably be in one of the Tampa Bay lineups, but Tyler Toffoli must have one of the best jobs in the world. He's playing with Suzuki and Cole Caulfield, and in some ways, is either you just pass the puck to Cole Caulfield for a good shot, or you reap the rewards of one of them passing you on the goal line. So I think that since the fourth line, the second line and the first line has really worked out, the third line is, you know, you can deal with it, and they're still playing very, very well. And you have to acknowledge, everyone is saying, you know, Kotkaniemi is a success. He has scored more goals, I think, or than Gretzky did in his career until he was 21. And I think that you need to keep this in mind. He's one of the top performers in Stanley Cup history under 21.
Yeah, I mean,
and we're talking about Kotkaniemi, who's many say is a failure, and they are so young. This group of young players coming up, and there's even more in the pipeline. The future looks really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, and we talk about mix regarding grit or speed. You also have the mix regarding experience and young and hungry players. And you mentioned Corey Perry, who's having his second bloom there. Eric Staal, 36 years old, both of them. And then you have 20 and 21-year-old guys like Caulfield there who are playing very, very good and who are making very mature plays sometimes. I mean, you see sometimes that they are 20, 21 years old, but you don't see that too often, and that's also one of the reasons why they are in the finals. So let's remember
Cole Caulfield can get Rookie of the Year next year.
Yeah, which is that I mean,
and that is insane, but it's cool. But yeah.
Yeah, I don't like those rules around Rookies of the Year. I don't really like that. It was the same with Cale Makar, who played for the Avs in the playoffs, and then he comes into the regular season, he can win the Rookie of the Year. There are some things.
Or Kaprizov right now, let's be honest. He's played professional for the last 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's... I mean,
he's rookie in the NHL, but he's not a rookie ice hockey player.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. So... Let's talk about the finals. And you mentioned that the Canadians seemed not to be too ready for game one. They didn't play really, really bad, but I think that they were they made some mental lapses in a way that I think those were just sloppy plays. The plays that were leading to the goals for the Lightning, some of them were just sloppy plays. The first one where it's a pass across the blue line in the Tampa Bay, in the Tampa Bay zone that is getting picked by a point. They turn around, they make a run, deflection in their first goal, and a couple of other lapses there too.
Yeah, and you saw it last night as well with
and
it's mental lapses, and I think let's be honest here, you're an Avalanche fan. I saw the Avalanche night series, and I thought, how will Montreal cope with that speed? And they slowed Vegas down to a game plan that suited Montreal Canadiens. They haven't been able to do that with the Lightning just yet. They've gotten better, but these half a second or tenths of a seconds that you need that they had before, they don't have that against Tampa. And fair play to Tampa, because they are exploiting those mental mistakes, as you point out.
I mean,
you saw it the first goal last night was Carey Price couldn't see the puck when it left the stick. Second goal bounces around and a mental mistake. Was it Merrill? He should just put the puck on the other end of the ice and don't worry about a sweet play.
Yep.
And then obviously we have who was it, Charot or was it, who was it? Anyway,
the last one, Edmondson, the giveaway.
Edmondson, passing and a little bit nonchalant, I would have to say.
Yeah.
And instead of putting it in the corner to Petrie, it bounces off the wall. If this was in the forum, if this was in Bell Center, we would say the ghosts have moved back or the ghosts are there. Lightning doesn't have that story, but it was sort of a ghosty play. And fair play to them. They're using it. Much in the same way as, Fleury's mistake to draw that game and then Montreal winning it in overtime.
Yeah, I mean, but
it's a similar kind of mistakes, and Montreal isn't there yet. I think they have felt the pressure of 28 years out of the final. You don't have that experience, for Montreal Canadiens. They have players that have been there, but I think it will be a little bit of a change up with Montreal being able to have the last change. You get an O line against the point line, which will be most important, more or less. And then obviously you can exploit some of the weaker pairings of defensive pairings. But also, let's face it, Vasilevsky has clear-cut won the gold battle against Carey Price so far.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing, the first game, I wouldn't count that. I don't think that Carey Price decided that. And I mean, I think I read on your blog that there was some criticism regarding Carey Price. I mean, I think they played a very good game in game two, and those goals that Tampa scored, those were at least the second and the third one. They are on Montreal. They are not being scored because Tampa has skilled players. They are mental lapses by the Montreal Canadiens, and I wouldn't blame Carey Price for any of those two goals.
No, I'm not blaming Carey Price. I'm just saying
that
Vasilevsky has been better.
Of course,
I'm not saying that I'm blaming Carey Price, because that is the last thing I want to do.
Yep.
But I'm saying that Vasilevsky has gotten those bounces, has gotten those, and when he has made a mistake, like maybe on the first goal last night, or the only goal, which takes a bit of a bounce and then goes in, then it doesn't matter because they get a bounce directly after or at the end of this period, and that is fine. But so far, Vasilevskiy has made that extra save that wins you the cup or wins you the game, and Carey Price hasn't done that just yet. He's been solid. He's been good. I think reactions towards Carey Price are... a goalie in Montreal is either heaven or hell. They're nothing in between. It's been like that through the history of the organization. And we've been blessed with a lot of very, very good goalkeepers, but they've also been run out of town sometimes, like Patrick Roy to a certain Avalanche team.
No complaints here.
But I think, it's... I'm just saying, like, so far Vasilevskiy makes maybe that extra save, but it also comes down to it's funny. A former skier in Sweden used to say, "The more I train, the more luck I have," and the better it's a little bit like that. The better I play, the more luck you have. And Tampa plays very, very well right now. I'm not gonna say anything that is undeserving of Tampa because they are playing supremely well.
So we talked about the coaching change the last time. This time they get a coach back for different reason. Dominique Ducharme was out or was forced to stay at home because of the COVID-19 protocol. How do you think will that also help? Because there was some criticism regarding some of the line changes, some of the shifts in game one. I think they were way better in game two, obviously. And now you mentioned they have the last change. So that is going to something they have to exploit. They have to exploit a lot of times and try to use a lot of times. And I think that having your head coach back, the main guy, will help with that at all.
Even if you have the head coach on Skype or Zoom or whatnot in between the periods and before the game and after game, it is something different when he stands in the booth and behind the bench. Yeah. I think it might not mean so much in regards to actual game situations. It's just that you're a little bit more confident when he's there. Luke Richardson, who has done a very, very good job of coaching the team while Ducharme has been out, he can focus back again on the defenders, and I think that will help as well. So it's more of a confidence and maybe a little bit more being able to sort of pinpoint certain ideas. And Luke Richardson doesn't have to have the overall view anymore. He can just go and talk to the defenders, and I think that will benefit Montreal a lot more. A question is also, will Killorn come back? Because that will obviously change the series a little bit. He took a slap shot, not a bad hit or anything, but he took a great slap shot from was it Petrie that hit him on the ankle, and that's one of the unprotected areas of an ice hockey body. So we'll see what happened to Killorn, but I think the coaching change or getting Ducharme back will be a little bit of a confidence boost for the whole team.
And speaking of confidence boost, I have your Twitter picture there. That is in the Canadians and in the Bell Center there. So you were there. You experienced the atmosphere there. @Zap_Habs is the Twitter account. I will link you. I will link the blog, Habs Eyes on the Prize as well. But having experienced that atmosphere there, I read about 10,000 people might be able to be in the arena when game three starts.
It will be 3,500.
Oh, okay. So they didn't get permission. Okay.
They did not get permission, which is a little bit weird because they're going to be 25, 30,000 outside. Yeah. Anyway.
I don't understand those riots. I mean, I understand celebrating, and I will never understand how you can destroy your own city when your team wins. I mean, in Vancouver, they lost and destroyed the city. I don't like that, but somehow you get that. But winning and then destroying your own city is something. I mean, Philadelphia did that in football once they won. So I don't know. That's North American. I don't understand that.
It seems North American, definitely. Yeah. I think this time it was in brackets or in quotation marks. It was only a police car.
Yeah,
it seems. But it's still too much. Everyone after this year, I think everyone should just celebrate.
To be able to go out.
Yeah,
exactly.
So I think having been there, I was there in a mid-season game against Florida, so I shouldn't really be saying too much because the and you obviously in Germany with maybe some of the best fans on the football around the football pitch ever. It's different. We come from Europe and we think we are grown up with this atmosphere of, you know, fan clubs and chants and everything. And the chants in and I'm saying this as a Montreal fan, but the chants in is go Habs go and ole. It's nothing funny. It's not that history that they should be what we would have expected a 100-year-old, 120 years old hockey club to have in Europe, or a football club to have in Europe, where you have sing about the history of the old players and building the game up and with drums and everything. And you don't have that, unfortunately, in NHL. I don't know why. It's something that if I was an owner, I would promote that and have a standing section or anything to just carry that team more and more forward. But it is a good atmosphere. It's a good atmosphere. But for Europeans, I think it's more of a normal atmosphere.
Well, I mean, I haven't been to a playoff game there, but I've been to some places and I've had some games that were close in basketball and hockey. So there is a kind of atmosphere. But I mean, that's you mentioned topics you could talk about in the summertime. That would be another topic to talk about, fan experience in the American arenas. It is. They are different. They are different. They want to be entertained. There's, and regarding the chants, I mean, what they also do is kind of mock the other goalie with chanting his name. But in Europe, they are way more creative. They are way more creative. I mean, some of that was bad. I think it has changed a lot regarding no more slurs, no more insults.
And they also try. You have the songs about the Munich disaster for Man United that has sort of been gone. There's also been an English guy singing, you know, about the Second World War. Those are being phased out as well. And I think, you know, make it fun, make it cool. Obviously, you have Liverpool with their anthem, really.
Yeah, but
you know,
just we talked about the Euro. Just the English singing their national anthem each time the second half starts. I mean, it's not nothing special, but I think it's a great tradition.
Yeah, and also you have the Rule Britannia is usually one of those songs that goes out.
I mean,
it has some imperialistic motives, but yeah, it is history, it's tradition, it's something like that. You saw it, the Scots sang their anthem as well halfway through the game or first half, I think it was against England. But you have that, and it doesn't have to be, but it has to come from the people. You cannot market that in. You have to let it grow from within, and maybe Vegas will be able to do that sooner or later.
I mean, that was
on the line.
I got to say, I was there for two games. That is an atmosphere. That is an atmosphere. Those were regular season games. I've talked to the guys from Sinbin Vegas a couple of times. Rex Chapman from one of the radio stations there in Vegas. Those guys are telling me the playoffs are a different beast. They have an atmosphere there. For whatever reason, and I don't think anybody expected it to be that way. I mean, there was tragedy behind that in the beginning as well with the shootings there. But they click with their citizens, and that is a great, great arena to go to. Everyone who's ever going to Vegas, if there is a hockey game, make sure you're going to go there. That is unbelievable. I mean, they are crazy. You talked about drums and stuff like that. It is overboard in some ways, but it is loud and they cheer and it's fun.
I think the nerves is what I feel in I haven't been to a playoff game, so I'll be honest with that, but I can fathom the nerves in Montreal in Bell Centre. I think those are more exposed. You can feel that, but also I remember when PK Subban was playing and the chance around him and carry that team in 14 to really carry it forward. And I think that is exceptional, you know. But yeah, you mentioned Vegas. I know that Ottawa has tried to start a fan club. Hasn't worked out.
Well, there are different reasons. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But I'm looking forward to the rest of the finals. I just wish they were on, you know, 10 o'clock European time. It would have been perfect.
I wanted to sum it up and I wanted to ask you, okay, what would be your tip for the remaining games? It's 0-2 now, so winning 4 out of 5 against Tampa, that is kind of a challenge. What would be something you were pleased with, and what is something you expect from the last?
I've said Montreal in 7, so I can still stand
okay,
by
yeah.
that. it wouldn't surprise me if it goes to 6. Tampa in 6 wouldn't be surprising. I think that is probably the best we can hope for. Maybe I hope for 7 games, partly because I'm partial to the hockey and I want to see more hockey. But I hope it doesn't become a sweep, and I don't think it will be. I think Montreal will win at least 1 game in Montreal, and then they will be able to get, if they don't win the 2 in Montreal, they will probably be able to sneak in a win in Tampa. The question is, can they sneak in a couple? Like, they need to win. If they lose right now, they still need to win 1 in Tampa. But if they lose another in Montreal, they need to win 2 in Tampa. And I think that is 1 too many.
Yeah, I also think or hope that they at least win a game, at least extend the series. I think it would be good also for the league to not have a sweep in the finals. So we haven't had one. I don't know when was the last sweep. Was it the Devils? No, it could have been the Devils in 95. So I think the NHL is lucky that they don't have too many sweeps there. Patrick, again, thanks a lot. I will link your Twitter page. I will link the Habs Eyes on the Prize. There's a lot of stuff going on your guys' homepage. Not only Habs, also other topics in the NHL. We mentioned a couple of them. There are a lot of things you could talk about in the offseason.
I want to say something, and I think it's very important that we don't sweep the Chicago Blackhawks situation under the carpet somewhere. Real journalists are doing some amazing work in looking into what happened there in 2010. They won the Stanley Cup that year, but it's the sexual harassment that needs to be investigated properly, and it needs to be punished in any way, because it does seem like they have facilitated more sexual harassment in other situations, because they gave this guy a glowing review so he could continue work with young kids in hockey. If you haven't read up on it, please do so. Yeah. I think Chicago Sun has done some good work, or Chicago Tribune, I don't know which on the top of my head. And The Athletic is obviously doing some really good work. I just want to mention this because I think it's a very important subject.
Yeah, and that's great to end on that way. And I think that is also a great thing about what happens in hockey. Not that the story is great, but there are so many topics brought up to light now regarding racial issues. A lot of the journalists, I think it's Dom Lucision, I think is his name pronounced from The Athletic, the stats guy usually, but I think he had a great piece about the refereeing. He had Connor McDavid there as his main example about how they change calls from the regular season towards the playoffs. I mean, the fact he pointed out the fact that he had 8 or 10 games without a penalty called on him, that's just ridiculous. And those things like the sexual harassment, all of those stories, they have to be called out. And I mean, Gary Bettman going out before game 1 and saying we got the best, not only the best referees in hockey, we got the best referees in all of sports. I mean, sorry, I've never been a big fan of Gary Bettman, but that is just pure embarrassment for the whole league. And if the top of the game doesn't realize they have to change some things regarding referees, regarding racial issues, regarding bringing in more women into sports, supporting hockey for women, those harassment situation there, all of those things regarding not only for the Blackhawks. I mean, you mentioned the Blackhawks. There were so many stories coming out of youth hockey in Canada where they had all those traditions for the rookies in youth hockey. I mean, that's just disgusting what is coming out there. So all of those things, as bad as they are, I think it's great that there are so many great journalists working on them, and also blogs and podcasts like yours, just pointing out those things, talking about them, it's going to help the game be better and then grow the game through being a better game, I think. And so that's just unfortunate story, but it's great that a lot of people work on that.
I agree wholeheartedly.
Okay, Patrick, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Lars. It's always a pleasure. Hopefully, we get to have another podcast after the finals.
All right, right before game seven. Right before game seven. That would be great.
It's a date if it happens.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Talk to you soon. Thanks for listening. Bye, guys.